The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome to Great Match Generator here. We are actually seeing each other because we're actually recording this on Zoom. Yep. Me and Matt.
Yep. We got the video going.
We're not actually going to release the video because I look ugly today.
I haven't showered.
Yeah, he has to put dirt on his home.
Doing some lawn work right before this, so not a video day.
Not a video day. But I'm wearing this nice Philadelphia Extreme shirt.
Nice. Awesome.
From Pro Wrestling Tees Barbershop Window.
I do love that site.
Yes, so it's been a while since we've done one of these. Greatest Wrestler Ever launched. Greatest match ever. Are we moving back to November?
Yeah, I think so. So it seems that the kind of consensus on the board is that a year is maybe just a little too short of a window to kind of feel like we're getting work done between them. So we've decided to move it to November. So instead of SummerSlam, we're doing it the Survivor Series. And then I think after that, we'll probably go every other year. It seemed like that kind of was what people liked. And that will also put us to not be doing it the same year that the big Greatest Wrestler Ever rollout is going to happen, which is, you know, seems like it would be overkill and too much competition for people's time. So I think it's going to be good. But
because a lot of people
that are back to November.
Greatest Wrestler Ever are also doing Greatest Match Ever. So it really is a great time to be a wrestling fan if you're on these boards. Greatest Wrestler Ever just got its start. I was part of a watch party on Saturday. We watched Jaguar Yokota.
Nice.
And it was fantastic. It was fantastic because I got to watch Jackie Sato.
Mm-hmm.
A couple more Jackie Sato matches. And yeah, man, the Jaguar Yokota is probably shooting way up on my list. She wasn't even on my list, but now she's shooting way up.
Yeah, she's fantastic. We, you know, in the Jackie Sato matches are really good. Did you watch the La Galactica match?
Yeah, the La Galactica match. Yeah, we Kat DeBerry had a 2-hour comp, and it wasn't really like a best of. It was like her in different roles. So the La Galactica match was one of the matches he chose.
Is it the big one, the one that everybody loves that's got the arm blading and like?
Yes, with the arm blading.
Yeah, that's
where she's biting the arm, and yes,
that's.
I was like, this match is disgusting but epic at the same time.
That's a match that's making my greatest match list this year. It's
oh, this me. That match might make my greatest match list this year too.
Phenomenal one. So lots going on. Always great projects to help kind of. To me, to help organize and direct my watching. Otherwise, I'm just kind of aimless in sort of what I watch and why I watch it, which can be fun too. But I do like these projects for that reason.
Oh, so, I was like aimless in my watching today. I watched some World of Sport, some Wrestle Association R, and I was sort of doing it in spirit of Greatest Wrestler Ever. Like, I'm going to evaluate these wrestlers anyway. So, you know, and you can get involved with both Greatest Match Ever at gweproject.freeforums.net and mm-hmm. Pro Wrestling Only is the hub. You think the GWE project would be the hub for the Greatest Wrestler Ever, but it's not. It's prowrestlingonly.com for the Greatest Wrestler Ever. And you can also join the Discord and get a mailing list. Steven is running that there on Pro Wrestling Only, so you guys get a good plug there for Greatest Wrestler Ever as well. And we have four great matches for you today, and we're going to talk the cases essentially of these four as well, of the eight participants as well, because why not? Ric Flair versus Blackjack Mulligan from JCP 1978. This was the 10-23 match, the Texas Death Match. Mm-hmm. Then we had Jerry Lawler versus Dutch Mantel, a barbed wire match. They had two barbed wire matches in the span of 7 days. I think this was the second one.
I think so.
Yeah, the March 29th one. And that's the higher regarded one. Mm-hmm. Then we have Kazuchika Okada versus Kenny Omega. G1 B-Block final. It was essentially the B-Block final from August 12th, 2017. And then we have the main event of SummerSlam 1992, Bret Hart versus David Boy Smith for the Intercontinental Championship. August, what was the date on that? Let me see.
August 29th, 92.
August 29th, 92. Mm-hmm. We saw it starting date order, so let's go to Ric Flair and Blackjack Mulligan. And speaking of Ric Flair, he was voted number one on the greatest wrestler ever.
Sure. Yeah, unsurprisingly, Flair was number one last year. I mean, I think there was a lot of talk about other people. We'll see if he holds on to it this year.
I don't think he's holding on to it. I really don't. I think...
Yeah,
I think a woman might. I think a woman might get it this time.
We're 5 years out. It feels weird to even like sort of make much prediction for the broader project, because who knows who's going to be participating. Joshi's got a lot of
support right now.
Ape and momentum right now, which I'm all for. 80s
and 90s. I'm all for it too. I'm all for the Joshi momentum, but Ric Flair is always a popular guy.
Sure. You know, you're going to have your Flairs, your Funks, Kobashi, Misawa, Hanson, Brian. Like, I think all of those people are going to get lots of votes. And so it's going to depend on what momentum looks like in 5 years. But you know, we have a pretty interesting sort of line on his resume. The Texas Death Match with Blackjack Mulligan was...
Yeah, this was a very bloody match.
What's that?
This was a very bloody match.
Mm-hmm. Well, Flair's a great bleeder.
So
even in a like kind of blurry 78 match, with his blonde hair, you can always see the blood, and you can get a feel for sort of how visceral it is and how much it adds.
I love Cunning Grover's comment on the greatest match ever for all. He said, "Great blow. This was a Texas Death Match. Flair juice. Great clarity. Not sure if it's in my top 100, but I still enjoyed watching this match." Those are my exact thoughts.
Yeah, I kind of feel the same. It's clipped, the one that we saw, and I'm not really sure how much we're losing in it, to be honest. It feels like it starts a little ways in. So we watched about 10 minutes of it.
Yeah, we watched about 10 minutes of it, and like I gave it like 3.5 stars, because it's like, this is like a 3.5 star brawl, 10 minutes, in and out. It's a brisk 10 minutes.
Yeah, I'd probably go a little higher on it. I think that they did. I see the reason it's nominated and the reason it sort of gets some hype. It's Flair's totally outmanned in it. Mulligan is the bigger brawler and is really sort of laying on the offense. He made that big claw.
That claw was brutal.
Looks absolutely devastating, because the fans are losing their absolute minds for it. So that was like really nice how they built up to that. It's really textbook kind of playing the crowd, right? Like the crowds into everything here, every move they do. It's pretty simple brawling. They use the counts pretty well in the Texas Deathmatch style, right? So it's a pin, and then you have to stay down for 10 after the pin, or after the submission or whatever it is. So they use that pretty well, and that can be something that loses momentum. I think the big thing for me is like, maybe I give this a little bit of a bump because Blackjack Mulligan absolutely paintbrushes Flair after the match.
Like, oh yeah, I remember that. It was like he just
in the face about as hard as you can. And Flair, I think he's selling, but he looks legitimately out of it. So great post-match, a little bit of extra violence in there. You get the run in from, I believe that was Steamboat, coming in and delivering some chops. And so kind of chaotic, hectic, straightforward. I'd probably go about 4 on it, what we see. I have to do a little bit more research and see how much we're missing, because I don't tend to rate anything that I don't feel like I have most of the match. But what we had was great, and I think it's you know, you see Flair being great, and you see Blackjack Mulligan, who's somebody who doesn't probably get as much general credit, being great as well. Big, bruising, you know, walking tall babyface here.
Yeah, I think Blackjack was very good here. He was a good babyface, just being a valiant, like, ass kicker, you know? And, like, Flair bumps around for him like nobody's business, you know? Yeah. And I just feel it was overall a very good effort.
Yeah, there's nothing like super surprising here. Great wrestling. It doesn't kind of come close to my list or anything like that, but certainly glad I watched it. This is the only match from this particular group that I had not seen before. I watched for our discussion, but I thought it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it felt like it of its time. It feels very good. Yeah. So let's go to the barbed wire match, which we had the whole match.
Mm-hmm.
Jerry Lawler, Dutch Mantel, and this was gritty.
Yeah. Yeah. This is a great match. It's been a while since I've seen it, but I really do like this match. Plenty to kind of unpack with this, but to me, this feels like a lot of Memphis does this. It feels like a bar fight in a ring. It's a lot of punches and selling and timing, and that's what Lawler really excelled at, and that's what Mantel really excelled at too. Again, another case where we have the guy everybody knows is great, or lots of people sort of consider to be great, at least those who watch Memphis and care and like Memphis. In Lawler, and then you have Mantel, who's a little bit lesser known, or maybe lesser praised in the broader.
Yeah, side. I had the Ric Flair Blackjack Mulligan at 3.25, but now I'm putting it at 3.5. And when I first rated it,
gotcha. But anyway, back to Lawler Mulligan or Lawler Mantel. It's great. It's great wrestling. It's I totally get why folks love this era. I'm not quite as high on Lawler generally as some people. But I do think he's a great puncher who makes the most out of his skill set and his timing. The use of barbed wire was sort of strange. So they're still doing rope runs. They're still like kind of bouncing off of the barbed wire, but they do it more of like grinding people into the barbed wire.
Yeah. It's not like the barbed wire stops you every time.
Right. Which yes.
I liked that, you know, I liked that. I liked how the barbed wire wasn't inhibiting the action.
It was okay. It was fine to me. They explained it well on commentary, which was that the barbed wire is to keep people out. So it's more like a cage in that regard, where they use it when they sort of will rake someone's face across it. Same with a cage. But you can still kind of run the ropes. You can still do all that stuff you need in a match. So it's an interesting barbed wire match. It's, you know, a great violent beating from both men to the other. So I really, really like this match, and it lived up to my memory of it. So, you know, it's awesome. If this showed up on someone's list, I wouldn't be particularly surprised. It's not quite there for me, but still really great.
I would rate this at a solid 4, honestly.
I was higher than that. I had about 4.5. 4.5, maybe even 4.75, depending on my mood. I'm not as into the 80s territory / Memphis style right this second. It's not like sort of the thing that's at the
not, forefront. It wasn't really my sort of style either. That's why I'm a little lower on it, yeah. Honestly.
But there have been times when I've liked that style more, or I've been more in the mood for that.
For instance, like 4.75 star match for me is a match I watched earlier today, the doll collar match. Like,
sure.
Like that's something I really liked.
The Flair like, Piper match, yeah. Or not the Flair Piper, the Valentine Piper match.
The Valentine Piper match is something I really liked. This is something I really like I liked it, but some of the nuances of it I didn't really get. Sure. You know. Yeah. from a modern wrestling fan's eye.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Like, I Memphis is something I don't think everybody is going to like quite as much. I'm slightly lower on it than its biggest champions, but I'm probably higher on it than, like, I'm higher on Memphis than most modern wrestling fans, and I'm higher on modern wrestling than most Memphis fans. I think that's sort of the best way I'd say.
I think Memphis has its place, and I think the promos are better than the actual wrestling in Memphis. If you know what I mean. If you know what I mean.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, the promos are great. I still just think the wrestling's awesome. I think it's in the vein of Lucha Brawls, right? Like these very simplistic, minimalist, almost kind of matches that are built around punching a guy in the face. That's something I have a ton of time for. And it's timing, right? This match is not built on, you know, we'll talk about Okada Omega in a little bit, like very different kinds of wrestling, philosophies on wrestling. And I have a lot of time for both of them, to be honest. And so,
yeah,
I love,
maybe I'll get a tolerance for it, but, but as I watch more of it, like I liked Valentine Piper. That's all about timing too, because it's like them punching at the right time, doing the dog collar thing at the right time.
Yeah.
But to me, the visual of the dog collar, it's just the visual of people running the ropes when there's barbed wire there. And I've been trained for so long to think barbed wire stops you.
Right, right. Well, I mean, but I thought you said you liked that it didn't inhibit them.
I did like that it didn't inhibit them, but also it was a conflict in my mind.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, it didn't bother me that much. It's certainly not a match that's making my list. I mean, I think the dog collar match is obviously better. I mean, it's not one we reviewed for this, so I didn't watch it.
No, recently. I just watched it today. That's why I.
Right. But I mean, you don't have to watch like the match. Like that's also fine. Like, and 4 stars is good. Like, I think
it's not like I hated the thing, Matt.
I'm not saying you did. I just said I liked it. I think this style is really maybe a little bit more for me, generally speaking.
Oh, okay.
So I like how they work against one another. There was some maybe like segments in the middle that I didn't love quite as much. I also did really love their heated punch exchange in the middle, right?
And it's sort of the heated punch exchange was awesome. That was like one of my favorite parts of the match. And then Flair goes for Lawler, my God, goes for the pile driver.
It's very much in the vein of like how we see a lot of modern indie wrestling. We'll still do the kind of like the punches in the middle, right? Like I punch you, you punch me. And right. I think a lot of people don't like that about the modern version. But here, it's they're selling it in such a way that like, each punch feels like it's doing a ton of damage, and it just, there's a different feel to it. So I kind of get why people might not like the more contrived modern version. Again, I do, but I couldn't help but sort of look at this and compare it or think of it in my mind as juxtaposed to a lot of modern wrestling and the way fans.
And then they trade the missed elbow drops, and then Lawler scores the pile driver to end that sequence.
Yeah. It's just lots of good simple stuff in this. I'd say 4.5. I think at one point I had it rated 4.35, but or 4.75, excuse me. Somewhere in that range. I think it's a pretty great match, and just outside of the kind of top tier that gets considered for my list, but still something I think well worth watching.
I think Dutch is very good in this match.
Yeah, Dutch is great in this match. He's great in the whole feud. I think I might like their, I think there's a no DQ match if I remember correctly that I like maybe even a little bit more. But regardless, they have quite a few matches and I really like all of them.
My favorite Memphis match, of course, is the concession stand brawl between Lawler and Funk.
The concession stand brawl or the empty arena match?
Empty arena match, that's what I meant.
It's a great match. It's sort of hard to rate or judge that match to me sometimes, but Funk and Lawler were great together too. They had a no DQ match that was great. you know, there's lots of good Memphis matches.
And then the concession stand brawl, who was that with?
I'd have to look it up. I don't know Memphis quite as well off the top of my head.
I don't know Memphis as well. I know there was a concession stand. I'll look it up. It's actually Tupelo. It was a Tupelo concession brawl. Here we go. Waller and Dundee versus Ferris and Latham.
Right.
That match is awesome. From 79.
Yeah.
Where they just brawl all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
That match is awesome.
Yeah, Memphis has lots of great matches and lots of great. It's a brawling territory, right?
It's a brawling territory, and it just depends on my mood. Honestly, I like a lot of brawls, but it depends on my mood, and maybe I wasn't in the mood for this match when I watched it.
Yeah, you don't have to be. It's all right, man.
What I was in the mood for was some Bret Hart, Davey Boy Smith. This was really good. One of the best. It was one of the best. Can we say this is like one of the best main roster WWF matches ever?
I don't think it is, but I'm lower on this match than most people.
I think it's one of the more exciting matches of the early 90s up until that point.
Sure. It's still a great match. I guess I could talk about what I like and don't like about it before we get into judging it broadly. I think it has a sort of slow middle part that,
oh yeah,
is I don't dislike it. It feels almost Okada-esque to me in that there's a lot of like sort of slow work that's done sort of near the beginning and in the middle, but then it kind of comes to a head and before you realize it, you're kind of in the heat of the match, in the heat of the last quarter of the match. And so I kind of likened it to you know that old saying that if you put a frog into water and then you start boiling it, the frog won't ever realize that it's getting boiled.
Right.
A frog into boiling water, it'll jump out. I almost felt like that, right? Like I didn't quite realize that the water was boiling in this match until I was sort of already in it, right? And I was sort of immersed in it, right? So it's not a perfect metaphor for what I'm thinking of, but you kind of get the point, right? Okada does that too in his longer matches, not so much in the one we'll talk about in a little bit, but in his longer matches, he'll start slow and then all of a sudden you'll realize you're in this just sort of incredible struggle between two people. I think this is kind of a microcosm of the things I love about Bret. I always think Bret's like a legitimate contender for one of the best ever, but I rarely know how to articulate that. Like, I really know how to like what to point to in Bret's work.
Oh, I had him number two.
Yeah, well, that's even higher than I would have him. But I think he's incredible. But it's also like, it's just, what does he do that's so great? Well, it's kind of everything, right? Some of the things that I think he does really well in this match that really shine is he does little things that set his matches apart or that set him apart, right? So for example, in this match, you get near the end, he's got Bulldog in a sleeper. And Bulldog backs into the corner and Bret has to let go of the sleeper. Well, instead of like letting Bulldog walk away, he kind of like comes to after he lets go and just puts the sleeper right back on, right? So you just never see that kind of thing. Like most spots like that are much more predictable. It's like once you, if you're listening to this podcast or if you're on PWO or if you're on Greatest Match Ever, the board, you can predict what happens in wrestling a lot of the time. You can watch it and you can know, oh, there's going to be a drop down or this is going to happen or he's going to kick out here. You kind of get a feel for it. With Bret, he zigs when I think he's going to zag a lot. And so he always kind of keeps me engaged in that way. He's always using Bulldog's momentum against him. I love the way he puts the sharpshooter on when they're both laying on the ground. I thought that was really cool. He kind of like just grabs the legs and just grinds to finally turn him over and put it on. And Bret knows the dynamic between himself and other wrestlers, which is great. Like he understands that more than anything else. And
I think that's the difference between like the really, really greatest of all time and just the greatest of all time.
Sure.
I think I think my top three were Kobashi, Brett, and Brian. And I think all three of them do that.
Sure, yeah, they absolutely do that. And, you know, so back to this match, I think for here, for this rather, Brett is out wrestling Bulldog start to finish, right? Like he's getting overpowered, but when it comes to like staying one step ahead, Brett is usually just a half step.
Psychologically better.
Yeah, he kind of anticipates more. He uses Bulldog's momentum against him. But then I love that by the end of it, you see Bulldog catching up a little bit more. So each kind of with each passing of a move or a segment of the match, Bulldog gets a little bit better, a little bit closer to him. And by the end, Bulldog's able to actually roll Brett up. And that's Brett often uses the roll up as a finish in WWE, which is kind of crazy.
It's an escalation tool.
There's a logic to it. He's out wrestling somebody. It's not a flash, but here Bulldog gets it, right? So I thought that was a really cool little like mini narrative within this match. Obviously the narrative is Bulldog winning the Intercontinental Championship.
But I'm reading Superstar Sleaze's thing in the Greatest Match Ever poll.
This is the smell of the leftover tuna fish sandwich you left in your lunchbox over the weekend in a wimpy trash bag.
Wimpy, wimpy, wimpy!
Blech! And this is the smell of that same sandwich in a hefty, ultra-strong trash bag.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
Ah, smell the difference? Hefty Ultra Strong has Arm & Hammer with continuous odor control, so no matter what's inside your trash, you can stay one step ahead of stinky. And for bigger jobs, try the superior strength of hefty large black bags.
Warm. And I think the NWA touring champ match is a perfect comp to what this match is.
Kind of, yeah.
Like, we get subtle heel, like, tendencies from Brett. Like, the champ comes in being all cocky and sort of like he's gonna raid into Bulldog Stadium and beat this hometown hero, mm-hmm. you know, and Brett sort of like feels like a Bockwinkle here, almost like an AWA style Bockwinkle.
Yeah, I can see that. He's definitely the cerebral champion, so. The guy who's physically outmatched, so Bockwinkle's a good comp, Flair's a good comp during his touring days, right? Like the heel champion that's physically outmatched by your local boy is, you know, it's timeless, and they are able to kind of use that a little bit. So I think
it's really subtle here because Brett's supposed to be a face that it makes his match really brilliant.
Yeah, he works like... He does what I really love when people do this. So it's not heel work, but it's just enough heelishness that you know who you're supposed to root for, right? You know, yeah. The Bulldog is the one you're supposed to like here. And obviously the crowd is, they're actually surprisingly a little bit more split than I would have expected at the beginning. But by the end, they want Bulldog to take the belt. They played the crowd brilliantly. I think my problem is I'm just not as big a fan of Bulldog as a lot of people. I mean, I think he's great physically, but he somehow finds himself higher in the general narrative of wrestling than I have him.
And that's sort of my problem with this match too. I was like, I think Brand Davey Boy, and I think, oh boy, we're getting this very good thing when it's really good, but not getting into that extra gear that I think I'm gonna get.
Yeah, I think the end is amazing.
The end is amazing. Yeah, that's peaking at the perfect pitch,
right? By the end of it, it's great. It's, you know, we're at, you know, the last five minutes are kind of perfect, but the rest of it is executed really well, but just there's something kind of that doesn't connect with me quite as much. I still think it's great. I still have it at 4.25. And I might have it, you know, there, again, it's kind of one of those, it feels like it's kind of between, it feels like a cop out, but
it feels like a 4.75.
could be, yeah, it could be a little higher to me, but 4.25 is where I've always had it. And it's, I didn't really come out of this thinking any different. It's a great line on Bret Hart's resume. And I think it's probably Bulldog's best match. I can't think of a match I think Bulldog's better in, to be honest. But yeah, White Hot Crowd, wonderful stuff. A good SummerSlam main event. And the fact that they main evented as the Intercontinental title match is pretty cool.
Yeah. Now we get to the 5-star classic. Holy mackerel. This still holds up. Oh my. Okada Omega. This is their best match.
I don't think so.
I think this is their best match. Oh my God.
I don't think it is. I still like.
Maybe the epics take so much out of me that I like this a lot more.
I'm more likely to rewatch this match than any other, probably. But I think I still.
Oh, yeah. This match definitely has the rewatch factor.
I still think the 2 out of 3 falls match is their best match.
If I'm being genuous, I would say the 2 out of 3 falls is their best match, but I can't rewatch it at a whim.
Right. Well, it's a 70-minute match. I mean, it's a movie, so it's different, right? And there's a difference between favorite and watchability and best. Like, they often will overlap, but this is still great. I still think this is a great match, but I still stand by, even though that match, that 2 out of 3 falls matches, it's a long match. It's not something I want to rewatch a ton. It's, to me, kind of the perfect
version. I think this match might finish higher on the actual list.
Probably. I don't remember how they finished last time, and I don't really want to look it up right now, but I would imagine so. I think I'm higher.
This 90-minute match, you're just marveled at, like, how much it is, how they pulled it off.
People are kind of weirdly down on long matches right now, and I get it, because I think New Japan's gone to that well too much. But yeah, I just think there's, like, kind of a weird, you know,
ebb and flow. Yeah, people are down on it.
People get high and low on certain matches, and I agree. Like, I want 20 to 30 minutes is kind of the most I want out of most matches. But when it
comes to. But they built to the Okada Omega match. So what people forget is they built to that 70-minute epic so well.
Yeah. When it calls for it, when it makes sense in the narrative, and people can pull it off, I'm okay with it. So, yeah, I mean, that's neither here nor there. We didn't watch that match for this. We watched this match. So I do think this is still a great match. You're probably higher on it than me. Why don't you talk about it first?
This is just excellent pro wrestling. This is what I want out of a 30-minute match. This is exactly what I want out of a 30-minute match. When I know the result, and when I am 5 years removed from a match and I'm still standing and pacing and I'm acting like it's the first time I've seen this match, mm-hmm. You know you have a great match.
Mm-hmm.
Urgency is something I've been harping on since the very beginning. This has it. From the very beginning, when they're going for their finishes at the very beginning, and then they keep up that pace the entire time. They go at a ridiculous pace the entire time. And you just marvel at how they go that pace. And they do some ridiculous stuff. The reverse Rana to the floor. I can mention like 1,000 spots in this match where, not 1,000, of course, but, you know, at least 5 or 6 spots that got me out of my seat. And I'm like, holy mackerel, this might be the end, and it's not. So that's where I'm at. I'm at 5 stars on this.
I'm not at 5, but I do think it's great. I think, to your point about urgency, it's something I value a lot too. When we first started the Greatest Wrestler Ever project, it was something I talked a lot about, and I was doing a lot better at, like, doing reviews for the project then. And I always talked about urgency when I'm comparing matches. And I think that this benefits from, they had 2 matches already. Omega knew he had to win. It was a non-title match. All the stars were aligned for Omega to win, but he had 30 minutes and he didn't have the long epic time frame to do it. So they come out swinging there. That gives them the ability to kind of sprint.
And I like that Okada came out swinging too, because
absolutely. So
Okada, Okada didn't have to come out swinging in that match. Okada could have just taken it easy and taken the draw. Right. And because a lot of people might knock this match and say, Okada's going to take it easy and taken the draw. Psychologically, that would have been like the best thing for this match. But I just love that Okada went bolts to the wall. It just made this match 1,000 times better.
It would have, I don't think it would have been the best thing. It would have been the easiest thing, but they explained it well, right? They explained that Okada, you know, he's got a lot of pride. He wants to beat Omega. They have this personal kind of feud. So it worked out perfectly that they both kind of sprint into the middle of the match where there's, I wouldn't say there's like a lag, but they slow down a little bit through the kind of middle third of the match, which makes perfect sense. You know, you kind of talked about the spots, some of the big punctuation marks in it. I think those were all really great. The thing that kind of strikes me here, and it's just because I've recently, you know, because AEW is a thing and I'm a big AEW fan, and I hear a lot of like the Kenny Omega critiques, right? Like people who don't like Kenny Omega.
I'm just going to say this, and it may be disingenuous, but if you don't think Kenny Omega, because he's Okada, is a great wrestler, what are you watching? What are you watching?
I think it's an approach thing, right? I think it's people who really like certain kinds of wrestling might have trouble translating to Omega's vision of wrestling. And I think that's okay. Like
I think more Omega than Okada. I think in the classic sense, he's a great pro wrestler. If you don't think Okada's a great pro wrestler, I think you're disingenuous.
It's possible. I have bigger problems with Okada than Omega myself, but I also, I think Okada's great. Like that's not, I'm not saying Okada's not great. Look, regardless. So back to Kenny Omega.
I'm just saying that because I have Okada as the number one contender in my pro wrestling, in my greatest wrestler ever, because the dude was on a run from 2012 to literally last year that's literally one of the greatest runs ever. And I'm going to get passionate about this because the dude, 8 years, that's longevity. People want to talk about longevity. That's longevity. And he's only 34. The dude's only 34. Imagine 5 more years of this. And he's not going to be like going on this sharp decline. He's still putting on great matches in 2021. It's not like this is a man who's completely broken down. And I rewatched this and I almost forgot how the structure, it all works for me. And I know people have problems with like some of the nuance, like Okada match formula and stuff like that. But if you don't think Okada is a great pro wrestler, I think it's sort of disingenuous.
Oh, sure. I mean, like it's not a greatest wrestler ever podcast, so I don't want to get too much in the weeds with this. Like, I think Okada's great. I do have problems with the formula being kind of feeling repetitive sometimes. But I think this is a great example of where the formula kind of, they're allowed to play off of it and mix it up a little bit, and it makes this match better for it, right? So that informs.
I think when Okada goes off formula, I think it's fantastic.
Exactly what I'm saying. So like this allows them to sprint a little bit at the beginning and get a different kind of match that they still wind up at the end where like Okada really excels at these near falls and reversals and just pulling the drama out. But to my point about Kenny, which is what I wanted to sort of talk about for a second, is one of the criticisms I hear is he kind of moves from spot to spot without really
right. I sort of get that critique more with both of them, and I get it, but it's like don't we want fluidity in pro wrestling?
Yeah, I can see it, and I think it's a matter of like
generational
styles change, and there's it's just a different approach, right? So I would say that this is, if I had to kind of pin it to one thing, is they kind of use adrenaline differently in this, right? So adrenaline can carry a lot. Adrenaline can make you do crazy things in a fight or in a competition, and it can give you lots of energy. Well, adrenaline just sort of carries the entire match, right? And so there are times when they sell longer. I think there's not as much dissimilarity between something like this and even like Flair Blackjack to be honest, on a macro level, it just is performed a little differently. And I think that Kenny is great at a style that speaks to a lot of modern fans, but he also then becomes the poster boy for hate for a lot of fans who have trouble relating to the modern product. He and Seth Rollins seem to be kind of the two.
Yeah.
I don't think they have a ton in common myself.
No, they don't.
But I think a lot of people group them together, and that's fine, whatever. So
I think because they're so big mouth, that's why.
Well, they're great athletes, right? Like they're also, it's like the joke is like CrossFit wrestling, right? Like,
right.
I see it because Kenny is so physically gifted. Like his physical timing is incredible. Like what he's able to do and how he's able to just millimeter precision on moves is fantastic. And that's why I really, really like Kenny Omega. I think he is awesome at what he does and his vision of wrestling. And he's true to his vision of wrestling. He doesn't change it.
And that's why I think people are being like hard on Kenny and Okada. It's like people don't want this vision of pro wrestling. And sometimes I feel like it's like, yeah, we had this vision of pro wrestling for a long time. But sometimes things change, and things have changed sometimes for the better, sometimes for the worse, who cares? Mm-hmm. But people evolve, and you know, and it really comes down to people wanting great wrestling. And I didn't mean to say disingenuous or not. I shouldn't have said that, but I just don't get it. You know, that's just my thing.
It's hard for me to relate to people who like spend too much time on what they hate, to be honest.
Yeah, that's me too. That's me too.
But so again, I kind of just to return it back to this match, right? I had that stuff in the back of my head because I'd recently seen it, right? So all of these like little sidetracks that we've taken, I had some of that stuff in my head. And so I could see it, right? I could see it in this match. I could look at this and be like, yeah, I totally get why somebody might watch this match and be like, see, this is why I don't like Kenny, but I still do. And I still liked, to me, all the logic hangs together. It's, I talked about this elsewhere where like, to me, psychology is, does a wrestler do something that makes sense with their character, that makes sense within the match, and then it makes sense within the larger kind of logic that a promotion or a time period demands?
And they do make sense in the larger scope of the promotion and of the time period.
That makes sense within New Japan. So if you don't like New Japan right now, that's fine, but don't say that like something like this doesn't have psychology, because it does. So it's a psychology that I like. I think this is really fun. I think it's a great, it's even sort of weird to call it a sprint because it's like 28 minutes or something.
28
like
minutes. It's not a sprint, but the match feels like it's 10 minutes.
Yeah.
I was like, you know, and I get excited about wrestling like that. And it's like, that's the wrestling I get excited about. And I also get excited about watching stuff like Jaguar Yokota.
Yeah.
I also get excited about watching Steve Gray and all these different guys.
Well, it's a good, I mean, it's a good sort of mentality to have for a podcast like this, where we're watching things from different perspectives or different time periods and different areas and stuff like that. And so we can all kind of love it all and compare it all and sort of be into it all. But you know, the long and short is, I think this match is physically so crisp and clean, but without feeling overly polished. I love the pacing. I love what they do with the 28 minutes that they have and how they build off of the longer matches they'd had. And then also build towards their eventual rematch that wouldn't happen at in Tokyo, but happen at Dominion the next year. So overall, just I love kind of everything about this match. It does fall just short of elite to me. I would say 4 3/4 for me. It doesn't make my list. None of the other three make, or the other three Okada Omega matches make my list, but they all rank really highly. So I do love the feud.
That's fair.
Love their dynamic. I just think they do what I really want all my feuds to do, and they build to the best for last, right? The last thing they do is the crescendo, and it's wonderful. But this is still great pro wrestling. And if you wanted to sort of get into New Japan, it would maybe kind of, or this era of New Japan, might be a match I would recommend, because it's got two people who kind of embody the style in a G1 match that limits how long they can go.
Yeah, I would say either this or the Okada Tanahashi, or the Okada Tanahashi Invasion Attack one, one where...
Yeah, there's lots of different ones. I think like Omega is a great intro for people who don't watch New Japan, because he does bring like
the American.
Yeah, he works more in that big New Japan match style than anything else, but there's something that's sort of translatable, especially if you followed his indie career. Like I watched him in the indie
right
too. So yeah, I think both of these wrestlers are great. I love this stuff. I do get why it's not some people's favorite thing in the world, but
I honestly get it too. Listening to you and listening to, and but honestly, for me, it's like I started watching wrestling in 2005. Missed all the eras of the Noah, the All Japan Four Pillars, the Attitude Era.
Right.
I missed everything.
Mm-hmm.
This was the era I lived through. So I'm probably gonna look at it through rose-colored glasses. Absolutely. This is my era.
Yeah.
Well, so I'm going to defend it like it's nobody's business, because New Japan 2012 to, I started watching in 2013 with the Ishii Shibata, which I watched today, and I still love that match from G1 2013. I'm going to look at it through rose-colored glasses and say, this is the reason why I got back into pro wrestling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the same kind of thing with me and like early 2000s ROH. And
yeah, I missed out on that too.
That's the thing that brought me back in. We're all going to have our favorites. We're going to have, I think you'll see, to my point about Memphis earlier, a lot of the people who really, really love Memphis grew up with Memphis. That was their childhood wrestling, or the thing that they liked when they were teenagers or whatever. And so you can only have, kind of maybe one or two styles promotions that do that for you personally, which is awesome. And I think, I'm happy that this brought so many people, this kind of stuff brought so many people into wrestling, brought wrestling into mainstream circles in some ways. And then obviously this led to what we have now. Like, this is in some ways some of the stuff that led to us getting
AEW.
And I'm such an AEW mark right now. I just think it's so much fun and such a good product. So great wrestling. Again, I give it 4 3/4. So I think it's awesome.
Oh, I got to look at the next episode. Oh shit. I just realized I had to look at next episode, and I'm like, I'm not even organized. Because we kept passionate about this stuff because we love this.
Yeah.
That's why we do these projects.
Yeah,
to have discussions like this. Mm-hmm. You know, that's why we do this, honestly. I wasn't trying to be like a villain or anything like that.
I think we all like the wrestling. It's I don't think anybody was against anything here today.
You know, it's just we love pro wrestling, and in the next two weeks, we're gonna be watching some good stuff. You want to hear what we have?
Yeah.
Do you want me to reveal the last match first?
Sure.
Shinobu Kandori versus Bull Nakano chain match.
I love that match.
All Japan Women LLPW 714-94. Rick Rude versus Ricky Steamboat 229-1992. I think that's the 30-minute one.
I think so. I don't know off the top of my head the date.
229. I'm going to look it up later.
What are the other ones?
Guerrero Maya Jr. versus Virus 10-6-2013. CMLL. And then Bob Backlund versus Pat Patterson from WWF, 7/30/1979. You might have to do some searching for the WCW one either, because Peacock might not have everything.
Yeah, that's true. Interesting. The Steamboat, the Iron Man match is 6/20/92.
Oh, so this is the...
It's a different one.
229.
Okay, so lead up. All right. Cool. Awesome.
I have actually 92. Super Brawl. Super Brawl 92. Classic title match.
Sounds good.
Plug a plug chug.
Yep. Twitter at Markout Mountain. You can obviously find the greatest match ever at greatest wrestling ever, GWE.freeforums.net. So fun project. Again, we're kind of pushing off till November. A lot of our conversation is going on over at PWO right now because the greatest wrestler ever.
I was going to mention that.
People are super pumped about that. So
yeah, people are super pumped. I am super pumped because yeah. I've been like commenting in. I commented in the Brian and Okada thread.
Nice.
Of course, I commented in the Okada thread because I was just talking about like how I rewatched the match the other day and I loved it to me. But for me, it's DJ D Kooks on Twitter. And D Kookie Punk 43 on Instagram. You can listen to us on the Social Suplex Podcast Network at Social Suplex on Twitter. Is where you can find all the latest stuff on Social Suplex, and you can go to socialsuplex.com for all the latest posts on the Social Suplex. And that will do it for us today. Matt, you have any last words?
Nope. Make sure
you turn. Love pro wrestling. Pure pro wrestling love.